Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:11 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is December 6th. And I thought we'd kick off with Bitcoin because it had a flash crash on Saturday and then quickly retraced about half of it, and subsequently hasn't really gone anywhere. And the primary consistency of the trend up from the lows in June has been the consistency of the ranges. The first two lasted about 2 months, and then they were equally sized, give or take, between $10,000 and about $12,000, and one above another. So then the next range, it should have found support somewhere in the region of 50,000, and then it dropped precipitously through that level on Saturday, but then it's rebounded. So then I guess if people were just going to look at the chart on a closing only basis and not pay attention to the intraday moves, well, they might be forgiven for thinking that this is still a reasonably consistent trend. Now, obviously, we've had a bigger pullback, so this is already a bigger range, and that's an inconsistency. But we're also in the region of the previous peak, so it's not all that surprising that we get at least some pause and consolidation and a somewhat larger range in the region of the all-time high, because it's a period of time for reflection about whether one really wants to pay all-time highs for an asset, or whether it's a good time to take some profits. Well, there was definitely a lot of profit taking last week, and that certainly would have factored through into some decision making about whether to take profits ahead of the year end and then try and write them off against any losses that have been taken this year. So certainly some tax selling was part of the reason why we've had such a pop in volatility over the course of the last week. But then when we look at the VIX index, well, it popped on the upside on Friday. It got all the way up to 35 and then failed. And now it's still steady around the 30 area, despite the fact that the stock market has rebounded in a pretty emphatic fashion in here today. So the Dow Jones has rebounded quite impressively from the region of the 200-day moving average. And there's been a distinct loss of momentum over the course of the last 6 months, and that's unwound the short-term overbought condition, and now it's rebounding. So as long as we see these indices continuing to bounce from the region of the 200-day moving average, and in the case of both the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, it's the 100-day moving average is more relevant because of the momentum that's been present over the course of the last year. And most particularly, that they continue to demonstrate support in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. So the S&P 500 was up 1% today, and confirming support in the region of that 4,500 point level. And then the NASDAQ, having had a downside weekly key reversal and follow through on the downside last week, it really needed to bounce in here today. And it has. So following a decline right off the open, it's reversed that. Now, it hasn't completely unwound the decline that we saw on Friday. So we're not out of the woods just yet. And certainly there are questions being asked about the continued resilience of the extraordinarily large companies that dominate this index. And then also, because of what's, I think, the perception of how severe an outcome the response to the Omicron virus is going to be, that's moderating significantly, particularly over this last weekend. There's, a broadly held view that it might be more transmissible and it might even be able to overcome waning resistance from some of the vaccines, but that it's not going to result in a large number of hospitalizations. And I think it's a little early to draw that conclusion just yet, but this is certainly the abiding conclusion that most people are drawing. So that's definitely contributed to a return of the opening up trade. And we look at the best performing shares and the worst performing shares today. Well, Norwegian, Carnival, Royal Caribbean, United Airlines, they're all among the best performing shares and all up in the region of about 10%. And the worst performing shares was Moderna and Monolithic and Generac and Pfizer. So obviously these are also companies that were really benefiting from the pandemic and the stay-at-home phenomenon. So we're getting another reversal. So this has been a very whipsawish market. The broad indices have been able to sustain reasonably consistent advances. But inside those indices, we've had a great deal of churn. And that's been most particularly true of the number of shares trading above the 200-day moving average. Now, this is not updated on the daily. So the figures that we're looking at right now are for last Friday. And we've no doubt had a significant deterioration in the number of shares that trade above the 200-day moving average, because back in December of last year, it was nearly 90% of shares were trading above their trend means, and now it's only 40%. So that's a significant deterioration. Now, one of the nice things about this index is that we have lots of back history. So we can see that there is a cyclicality, that it does go up and down a lot. But what it also tells us is that after extraordinarily depressed levels, we get all-time highs. And that's not too difficult to understand, because when you see something that's been going down for a long time, well, then it doesn't take a lot of push on the upside, particularly from very depressed levels, to start to send it back above the 200-day moving average. And that's what we had after the credit crisis, that by the time we got to the end of 2009, over 90% of shares were trading above their respective trend means. Of course, they were coming off of extremely depressed levels. And that's also what we had in 2020, because we had this incredible decline where it went from about 67% of companies to almost none. And then it rebounded in emphatic fashion. Well, it's pretty normal that we would then have a consolidation, and that not every share is going to continue to do as well as it did right off the lows. So you would anticipate that some of those companies would start to deteriorate, and of course that's what we saw. And a lot of those opening up companies, like Marriott, like the airlines, well, they all had a significant rebound. And then they pulled back. Now, Marriott is still above its 200-day moving average. A lot of the airlines aren't. And a lot of the cruise liners aren't. And they're still at reasonably depressed levels. And then we can think about some of the casino companies. And not only are they contending with the COVID crisis, but then also with the potential that they're going to lose business in Macau as well. So they are likely to offer leverage on the upside if by any chance we see that the pandemic is coming towards an end and that China begins to ease up on the kind of tightness that it's imposing on lots of leveraged parts of the economy. It would be likely at this stage that we're going to see that the number of shares that have been trading below the 200-day moving average will start to move back up again. And if we are coming towards the end of the pandemic, and I think what we've seen, and it's been one of the abiding characteristics of this bull market, has been that investors are willing to look through the short-term noise to what the solution is likely to be. So we've had a rebound on stock markets because investors are pricing in the potential that the infections, even though they might rise, are going to be less severe, and that Pfizer's treatment and the potential for boosters and the potential that boosters can be tailored to whatever the new variant might be, well, all of that suggests that we're coming towards the end of this portion of the pandemic. And we're getting to a point now where it is endemic. So we're going to see this continue to roll around from time to time. And we're going to have increasing numbers of vaccines. We're also going to have early symptom treatments. And we might have those as early as the beginning of next year. So that would suggest that by the time we get to the end of 2022, it's going to look a lot more normal. And we're going to start to find out what it's like to live with this, just like we've lived with lots of other viruses in the past. And of course, what that also begs the question then is, what's going to happen in terms of the bond yield? So bond yields pulled back in a very violent manner last week, and they were down heavy on Friday, and then rebounded in here today. So we're getting quite a lot of volatility as well in the bond markets, because there is this raging debate going on, and it really is clearly centered on the question about just how well can, or how effective can, the Federal Reserve be in raising rates. So the volatility on treasuries got up to test the peaks from back in 2019, and obviously we had an awfully big pop on the upside last year, but generally speaking, this is about as high as volatility for bonds has got over the course of most of the last decade. So obviously we had a great deal of volatility heading into the credit crisis and during the credit crisis, but subsequently volatility has been held within this long base formation. And in just the same way that people buy a peak in volatility for stocks, they're likely to buy a peak in volatility for the bond markets. So now the question is, what's likely? Are they going to continue to support the bond market by buying these bonds? And we've seen a lot of buying over the course of the last 2 weeks. Or are we going to see greater pricing into the potential that there's going to be interest rate hikes in not so distant future? Well, the reality is that if the virus starts to recede into the background and becomes less of a threat, that enhances the potential that the Federal Reserve will taper faster. Then will they raise rates in a hurry? Well, obviously there's going to be a knock-on effect in terms of the debt servicing costs for the government. And obviously raising rates would have a knock-on effect as well for the highly levered portion of the market. But one thing that we certainly saw in here today was that some of the fintech companies that have been performing worst have at least begun to steady. And we do have very short-term oversold conditions. So it wouldn't be that surprising to see a little bit of a pause coming through in here. And Visa and some of the bigger companies were up in a dynamic manner in here today. So Visa is breaking the short-term sequence of lower rally highs, and it certainly has the scope here to rebound. There haven't been that many occasions in the course of the last decade when Visa has in fact got all the way back down to test the 1,000-day moving average, and it's really not all that far away from it right now. So let me maximize the screen again. So what that would suggest is that there is at least going to be a buy the dip coming in here, because people will still buy a yield, and when they don't get the yield, they'll certainly buy the dividend growth rate that companies like Visa and MasterCard have. Now obviously Visa's dividend growth rate has been contracting. It was 18% on a 5-year basis, and it was only 9% last year. And of course they are getting squeezed by companies like Amazon. So that was the primary rationale behind the big decline that we've seen already. But Amazon's also bouncing here, and they seem to be doing better with dealing with the supply bottlenecks around the world as well. So with these large companies continuing to do well, and with the potential that the number of shares trading below their respective trend means is going to improve, well then That would suggest that we're going to continue to see this bull market continue. Now, we still have an upward trend in the market cap of the eight large companies that have personified this bull market. And every one of those companies has its own individual characteristics and challenges. But the reality is that one thing that I find interesting is the degree of bearishness that we're getting right now. And people are lining up to call this a bubble and to say that it's inevitably going to crash and that it could crash any day now. Well, I agree. It's a bubble. We have valuations that are extremely high, and the parallels with 2010 only stretch as far as the number of shares below the trend mean, because valuations are considerably higher today than they were back then. But until we start to see underperformance by these large companies, then there's no reason for all the people that are long to sell. So, for example, Tesla also pulled back, and not least because of what happened with Bitcoin over the weekend. But then it rebounded in here and it's back above the $1,000 level and finding support in the region of the previous peak. Now, there have been bearish arguments raging about Tesla for a long time, and a lot of the shorts have been burned. It doesn't mean that the company won't eventually collapse or that it won't have significant periods of volatility. But I suspect that in just the same way that we've seen with other big bull markets, that it is the personification of the bull market does best and will continue to do well. And then subsequently, when the bull market eventually ends, well, then the personification of the bull will be vilified. And it's then that special councils will be employed, and the emails will be read in a way that will ensure that any kind of egregious activity will be brought to the public eye. But that generally doesn't happen until a lot of people have sustained significant losses. And there are a lot of people long Tesla, and particularly in the options market, and it dominates the options market, and particularly for retail traders. And this, of course, is something that we need to pay attention to, because Tesla remains a massive magnet for liquidity. Now, when we think about the parallels with 1999, one thing that we certainly saw in 1998 and 99 was that some of the champions within the sector, within the TMT bubble, started to peel away and start to underperform. And those like WorldCom, which had which subsequently went bust and was the subject of a lot of criminal inquiry. I'm trying to get the price history up. And we can see that it peaked in early 1999 and then popped briefly to a new high in June of 99. But by the time we got around to the early portion of 2020 of 2000, it was already trending lower. So something that we see is that market peaks can happen in two different ways, that leaders lead in both directions. So ahead of 19 of excuse me of 2008, the housing sector peaked in 2005 in USA, and then the banks peaked in 2007, but that their relative performance had already started to deteriorate before that. And then we had the crash a year later. So that was leaders in that cycle starting to underperform. Then what we might describe the peak in the 1990s as was a funnel top. So we get a large number of shares that do very well, but then interest in the sector is concentrated in an increasingly fewer number of shares. So what we might anticipate is that of the extremely large companies. And of course, it's the companies like Nvidia and AMD dominate the semiconductors index. So when we look at the constituents of that 8 shares in the Fangman sector, I suspect that if we're going to get a funneling top like we had in the late 1990s, that we're going to see individual members of those 8 companies, like Facebook, starting to deteriorate in a meaningful fashion. Now, you might argue that Facebook has pulled back, but it's bouncing today and it's finding support in the region of the upper side of the underlying range. And it's still in the region of the 200-day moving average. So I think it's a little early to write it off just yet. But it would be something to pay attention to if Facebook starts to pull back below 300, because then that would be representative of greater concentration of long positions in a fewer number of the mega cap companies. And that would be similar to what we saw in 1999. I think drawing the parallel today that we're seeing a narrowing of breadth following a massive decline in 2020, I think that's a normal part of the cycle, provided it's reversed. If the narrowing of breadth in the wider market persists, well, then that's also going to be a lead indicator and a problematic thing to pay attention to. But we don't have a lot of evidence to suggest that's the case yet. And of course, it's all really going to then come down to interest rates. I don't think the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates until they are 100% confident in the sustainability of the economic expansion. So I think they're going to taper a little faster. And well, they've already told us they're going to taper a little faster, and they're probably going to do it as well. And then they're going to see what happens. And then they're going to see if they can raise rates a bit, and it'll be well telegraphed. And we might even see some additional volatility. But as long as the economy does well, and we're coming out of the pandemic, and the economy opens up, and a lot of the undervalued companies that have been waiting out the pandemic for the last couple of years start to recover, and their cash flows improve, well, then that will embolden investors. So, obviously, we're going to have some rotation because when we think about the cloud computing sector, any company, sorry, that's the wrong ticker, any company that wanted to adopt cloud infrastructure did it in 2020. So they've pulled forward sales from the future. And we've had a meaningful pullback over the last month, and it's a failed upside break. And it's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows as well. So it's steadier in here today. But golly, it has a lot of work to do in order to really confirm that we're still in a demand-dominated environment. Because this is a very significant downward dynamic, or set of downward dynamics, and loss of uptrend consistency. And it would suggest that the cloud computing sector, or at least this ETF, isn't going to be where we might anticipate the outperformance to come from in the stock market going forward, particularly when a lot of the depressed opening up type companies in the leisure and tourist sectors are only really just beginning to fire on the upside. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.